You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
I don't remember. There's some time missing. What happened that night in the tunnel? Tell me the truth.
How could you be so honest?
You were seen in the area that night. Did you murder Megan Hipwell?
No.
How could you be so honest?
I'm not the girl I used to be.
How could you be so honest?
Why are you here?
Because I'm afraid of myself.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I am your host, Kale Smith, and I am joined by...
Brendan Cooley.
Nick Brisby.
And today we are going to be talking about The Girl on the Train and The Accountant. Guess which one was the better movie?
Well, according to Rotten Tomatoes, neither of them were, so...
Yeah. Oh, but yeah.
I liked one of them, though, so...
I did enjoy
it. Fuck Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It depends on, honestly, they hit it's a hit or miss with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they can't even get the DC movies ratings right.
Well, I think they're being too harsh because these movies have flaws, like the Suicide Squad, The Accountant, but they're still decent movies. You know, I mean, I think there's good things about them. So.
And the way Rotten Tomatoes works, a lot of people don't know this. The way Rotten Tomatoes works, it's not a matter of whether or not every critic hated this or every critic didn't hate this. It's a whether or not the consensus is. Did these people like it and these people hate it? 50% of the critics
right.
liked it. So half it was a half and half thing, as opposed to it being where, I don't know, Metacritic, which is on just a, they get a consensus and then they make a score out of that. So this is, Rotten Tomatoes is a, just a, did they give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down? And then they said, they record that and they said, well, 50% of people gave it a thumbs up. So that's what it was, as opposed to a Metacritic rating, which is kind of shitty.
Hey, Brandon, is your mic facing you? Like, is the white label in front of it? Just lift this thing up. See this? As we work through the technical difficulties.
Is that better?
Yes,
oh, that is a lot better.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot better.
I think yours may be turned around, too. Yeah.
All right. So.
Yeah.
My first question is, what the fuck happened?
Yeah.
Seriously, what the fuck happened
with
the
girl,
on
the train? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll start with that first, because that's like, let's go from worst to somewhat okay.
Yeah.
To, okay, we're finally somewhat in okay territory. So The Girl on the Train is a movie.
Terribly
it's a movie,
written.
Yeah.
It's
it
terribly
was,
written.
I mean, it's not as completely fucked as other movies like Fantastic Four or...
No, that's not
it's
Fantastic
Four.
It's Fantastic.
It's on the same
this.
Level of Fantastic Four or Fantastic. It's
well,
on that same level, though, I think.
Well, at least Fantastic Four didn't get, like, botched halfway through its post. This one, they just, like, rushed into
it. But it felt that way, though, because the editing in this is pretty bad. I mean, there is good cinematography. We mentioned
that. Well,
that
was probably due to the rushed editing, rushed everything. Because this,
because
when I looked at the production log or researched the production log for this movie, they literally started, like, pre-production, like, not this current summer, but summer 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And they started filming in December, wrapped around first week of February, and then finished around mid-July.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, for that kind of movie, though, you don't really need a huge production time.
Sure, but I'm always on the side of, look, take your time. If
well,
you don't,
yeah, of course.
Especially when you're working with material that may or may not be subpar.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I can agree with that. But, like, it's a drama that you can film. I could... Myself personally, I could probably film this within in about a month or two. If I had a good crew with me, I think I could have done it. I could have shot the whole thing in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what Taylor did, or that's what he did this entire time, but still he came out with a shitty product.
Well, you can definitely tell this is based on a book. I mean, the monologues in this movie are ripped straight from the book, it seems like. Just the dialogue is very stiff, and it's especially her narration and everybody's narrations in this.
Yeah,
just they tell you exactly what the plot is, what's going on.
Yeah, straight up exposition.
To me, metaphors. I mean, just...
Yeah, and my second question, not just metaphors, but allegories symbolism.
I was waiting for Basil just to show up and be like, all right, here's what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, my second question is, if the book is anything like the movie, who's reading this book? Because this is not only is it a bad book, but it's like it demeans pretty much everyone in the movie.
Right.
So the way I understand it is like the vibe they were trying to nail is they were trying to recreate Gone Girl, essentially. They wanted to get that fatal attraction vibe of this person is a terrible person, yet it's still a very sexy story. It's still this very intimate and romantic story, and that you have these characters that are compassionate about each other, but they still hate each other, or they're trying to play with the psyche. It's like this psychological thriller, quote unquote.
Well, books have more leeway with narration and exposition because they're books, you know. That's kind of the point.
Yeah.
And but films, though, you have to tell it visually, and you can't rely on the narration as much. So
yeah, the language of storytelling in a novel and in a movie are completely different.
They are completely different, mm-hmm. And yeah, you have different freedoms in both. You know, it's they didn't really know that, I guess, when they made this.
Or they just didn't care.
They didn't care, yeah. So, yeah.
So let's actually talk about The Girl on the Train. We've talked about how terrible it is, but let's actually talk about it. So this movie is about Emily Blunt's character, Rachel. She is an alcoholic divorcee. Is that the right term?
Divorcee. Yeah.
Divorcee. Yeah. And she is, you know, and she and every day she goes on a train back and forth like four or five times a day, or that's how it feels in the movie. To watch this couple that basically like fuck like rabbits.
And the train slows down just enough so she can watch too.
Yeah. Well, it stops right at their house for whatever reason. And then she gets to see, you know, her going to her therapist.
And she happens to be on the balcony the whole time too.
Yeah. She loves being on the front yard balcony.
That's right.
Even though...
To clarify, folks, he's talking about the person they're watching as opposed to Emily Blunt's character, Rachel.
Yeah. Well, which is so odd that she stands on the front of her house when there's like a beautiful ocean front or a beautiful waterfront, or because that's what it looks to me when we're in the behind like her ex-husband's house. Is there's this huge waterfront behind them? Like, why would you want to stand in front of your house? Wouldn't you want to stand behind it? Anyway, nitpicking.
I'll say from what I saw, I think that was a neighborhood behind them. They may have had a waterfront way off in the distance, but they had that train, and then they had that forest area that like where the
okay, all right. So
yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and we learn this character fascinates about this couple because she's still reeling from her divorce, and her ex-husband has completely moved on, gotten married, had a baby. Done all the things that she could never do, because I guess she could never have children. And 30 minutes into the movie, the girl that she's been fantasizing this whole entire time goes missing.
And it's a slow 30 minutes into the movie, too. I mean, it took a long time to get there.
I was like, okay,
we get it. She's sad. She envies this couple. She wants to be her. Okay, move on. Like, you got to get to the murder.
Get it. You
want to
watch them fuck.
And to be fair, the movie tries to cut away to the other three women and the other two women in the movie. The her ex-husband's new wife, Anna, and then Megan, is that her name? The nanny that she's kind of fantasizing about.
I don't even remember. These characters are so forgettable. Like,
I know. Yeah.
I can't even.
Nearly everyone's having an affair. Everyone is just.
I think her ex-husband's name is Tom. I'm not 100% sure.
That sounds right, yeah.
And then to add insult to injury, she picks this couple out of when she's sitting on the train watching this couple do the thing that it's doing. She managed to pick the only couple that happens to have a link to her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Like, how coincidental is that plot? Like, this is a lot of this plot is just happens because the plot says so. Nothing to do with the fact that, like, this could have maybe happened.
Yeah, this is very. I mean, you can say the same thing about Gone Girl too. Like, a lot of what that character, that female character, whatever her name is, Amy. Mm. Amy. A lot of things she does is completely like coincidence and just so happens to work out for her. But in this case, this is almost like bad. This is like so like close together that it's almost, it's forced.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my God, this, you know, the same ex-husband has, you know, ties to all three of these women. Like, this is ridiculous. And she's fantasizing about...
Should we talk about spoilers right now or get into it later?
Hold on just a minute. Yeah. And, well,
I mean, I think
actually,
at this point, everybody's
yeah.
seen it, so it's not...
Everyone that wants to see
who's
it.
Who's going to see it?
And yeah. on top of that, it's you don't
want to see it.
You don't want to see this movie. If you're worried about spoilers for this movie, I pity your soul.
Yeah.
So, okay. First thing I will comment is... The ending is so terrible, and it's like
you mean the
laughably.
Twist, the twist
yeah.
itself,
it's contrived. It's
yeah,
it's laughably bad. The whole third act. For those who haven't seen it, the ending is Tom, her ex-husband, was abusive to her during her marriage, but she doesn't realize this because she was such an alcoholic that she blacked out all the time during the abusive part.
Mm-hmm.
How convenient.
The way they filmed the twist was effective, but at that point I didn't care, so it didn't really make a difference. I mean,
yeah, because the biggest problem with this movie is you don't care about any of these characters. They're all like horrible people.
Yeah.
And I mean,
well, it's not about that. I can take horrible people. It's just that they had no motivation to like, I didn't care about their motivation.
Even
you know?
Megan, the person who got missing and eventually killed, her whole opening is, I'm a whore and I'm sad and happy about it. That's it. That's basically its bare bones structure is, I'm a whore. I love being a whore, but I also cry about it too.
I think the only saving character in this entire film was, who's the roommate? And she was a...
Yeah.
You mean the roommate that tried to kick her out?
Yeah, I think she's like the only redeeming quality. Like, yeah, you understand, lady.
She was in That 70s Show.
I can't think of her name.
You know, what's funny about that is she kicks her out, but later on in the movie, she, like, when she finds out about Tom, she leaves a letter saying, I'm moving out. Thank you for all these years. And I'm like, you were already getting kicked out, bitch. Did you black out at that part, too? I mean, my God. And then, holy shit, this twist. So
I think Emily Blunt was method acting in a lot of this film.
Yeah.
She was. That's the thing, is these actors were trying. That's the saddest part.
Like, I think she was actually drinking a liter of vodka between it, because I'd need a liter of vodka to get through this plot anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is...
The film really likes red herrings, too. They really like to distract from the point of the movie.
I know. and what's sad is there is... added more insult to injury is this movie tries to have, like, a theme about how, you know... It's trying to, and it's also having a twist about how we women fantasize about better lives than what they have, when really women are all oppressed by you know, men that are abusive. That's what causes them to have weird fantasies and get drunk. Did I just say that correctly, or am I?
Well, one guy was abusive. I mean, the guy who, the ex-husband. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, all the men, regardless...
I'm not sure if it's a theme, but, you know...
Well, all the other guys, like Luke Evans and Edgar Ramirez's characters, they're all terrible people. Or they're all... I would say terrible, yeah. But they have questionable morals.
I guess they do, but I didn't even know much about them because the movie never really focused on them at all.
I'm trying to remember. Luke Evans' character was the ex, was
I think
Megan's
it was
husband?
Scott. I think his name was Scott, and you're right.
Yeah. And that was another thing that I get they were trying to go for that, like, sort of, like, this is supposed to be a very sexy story, this sort of, like, they were trying to go for that.
Lots of nudity in the first 30
minutes. There's a lot of nudity in it, but the stupid part behind it, at least for me, that I found was Megan's husband, whenever he was, they tried to make it, like, look like Emily Blunt's character and him were had a thing together or were going to have
a... That was possible, yeah.
And, like, at the same time, I'm sitting there thinking, like...
Why?
There is no that serves the plot in no way at all. And the way they edited it together, it felt so fake, and it was like, there's no reason for that to be there, yet you're forcing this in here. This entire plot is shoehorned.
Yeah.
This whole plot, that's what I'm thinking too. So
here's a good question. Is there any way you guys could actually think we could fix this in terms of going back in the
production? Hell no.
Or editing?
I think the only way you could really fix this is if you were to loosely base this off of the book. I think if you were to take this idea and maybe make it along the lines of like a thriller, in the sense that you're not dropping any subtle hints at all, like mm-hmm. that you drop, like, or if you do drop subtle hints, you make them almost you make them almost inside jokes, like to the book almost, like that's how you would do it, because anyone who's read the book would know the plot anyway. But otherwise, if you want someone to, like, as I saw this plot coming a mile away at the end, I was like,
yeah, halfway through, you pretty much know who the bad guy is.
I think the two things would make it a lot better is taking out the narration entirely and making it into a 30-minute short film. Because if you convince the audience that she was the one who killed the wife...
The girl?
Actually, I think that would have been a Megan. Better plot. If she'd actually been... like,
I know. Yeah, I thought so, too. That would have made it more... the twist more effective. Or if she had been the one that killed the wife, it would have been more
if
interesting.
If she had been the one to kill the wife, I think it would have been interesting to see just how she did it, like, and got away with it. That would have been cool.
Yeah. Because keep in mind, Gone Girl, we always assumed that the first half that Ben Affleck could have been the one that actually killed his wife. That we were made to believe that. In this, we knew pretty early on that she didn't kill the wife. That, I mean, it was possible, but she was the main character. She was the protagonist. We felt we were supposed to feel sorry for her. So I think that was a mistake.
Yeah. Even though we don't feel sorry for her at all.
Even though we don't. Yeah, that's the problem, is that
she's not kind effective. Of a bitch either way.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
I mean, look, her ex-husband did fuck her over, but still, if everything she thought was true in the first half, like, she's still being a whiny bitch about this. Like, she's still like, get over it.
Yeah. At first I felt sorry for her, but then after a while it's like, no, this is going on too long. This is...
And then like they have like try to have that moment of silence where she goes to AA for like a minute.
Yeah.
And then like,
and then she goes to her, like, therapist to Megan's therapist that she thinks is a suspect. By the way, this movie, her motivations and like her logic and reasoning doesn't make any sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to cut you off, Nick.
Oh, you're good.
But I had to get through that because this is the same person who realizes that this person is a suspect. Like, she thinks the therapist could have done it, but she still goes there for therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, holy shit. And then at the end, instead of calling the cops when she realizes Tom has probably killed Megan, she just goes up to their house, to Tom and Anna's house, and try to get Anna and the girl and their baby daughter out of the house with Tom there. And it's like, and you didn't want to call the cops?
Well, I think in her defense, the police wouldn't have believed her because they already thought she was crazy.
That's something we didn't even talk about, was the fact that his current wife knew he was a cheater. Like, knew she was his mistress. Why would you ever marry the person you're sleeping with as a mistress?
Yeah.
You know he can cheat the first time. Never do that the second time. And then on top of that, she was like, even after all that, she knew he'd been cheating still.
And she's like, I liked it when I was the other girl or other woman. It's like,
no,
and that
no.
Was, yeah, that was the moment I was like, yeah, Anna's a terrible character. Like, this is horrible. God damn it. And sorry. But anyway, this movie is so frustrating.
The only sane people are the detective.
Yeah, and she looks at everybody like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the detective, the roommate.
What the hell did I step into?
Detective, roommate, and the guy who helps her on when she passes out. And in the bar, he's like, dude, I'm not sure what's wrong with you. I'm leaving. And he's like, that's basically the audience. We're like, that's us. I mean,
yeah, everyone acts like a character in a book. Everyone acts
it's a book,
fiction-y.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's when you're making a movie,
exactly.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be so obvious that they're from a book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not the point of a movie adaptation. Or a movie at all.
Yeah, these characters are very one-dimensional in a lot of ways. That's
I think, but you can contrast that, though, to the... when we started this off, we picked the girl with the train as a... That was actually something we didn't expect to pick when we initially picked it. We were going to decide, hey, we can go see this as a club, or we can go see this as a club.
Yes, mm-hmm. This is a movie we saw as a film club, and our choices were... And I'm not kidding you, people. We had... Our three choices were... Madea, The Accountant and this movie.
And Jack Reacher. Yeah.
Okay.
Jack Reacher's?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be between The Accountant or Jack Reacher. But
I didn't think Jack Reacher was. Is Jack Reacher out yet?
It's October. It's next.
Actually, this Friday.
This Friday, yeah.
Okay. But my issue with it was the. We had these options here, and we ended up choosing The Girl on the Train because we were like, well, this looks like an interesting plot. We've already told the school we're going to go do this, this, and this. And we ended up, at the last minute, we were like, you want to go see The Accountant instead? And we're like, no, we don't need to go see that at all. We're fine. Yeah. And then
not my response. The response was, I don't know. Well, since we already had people that wanted to see it, like we thought there would be, like we thought a couple other people would want to see The Girl on the Train. So that's why we stuck to it.
Yeah, out of all four of us, I think we all assumed that the majority wanted to see Girl on the Train.
Yeah, we all assumed each other wanted to see Girl on the Train.
None of us mentioned it and like, hey, should we not do this?
Because, I mean, I was perfectly okay with going with The Accountant. Yeah.
I think it was Carly's in my vote. Because Carly had asked me about it, and I'd said, Carly's a friend of ours, by the way.
Yes.
She'd asked me about it, and I said, well, I also heard bad things about The Accountant, too. And at the time, I didn't know. I didn't know anything about The Accountant except for just, like, the semi-basic plot of it. But moving on was the issue I was having was The Accountant got okay reviews. I didn't really look at it too much. And that was sort of, like, the issue that we were having was when The Accountant was going on, when The Accountant was starting out, like it was at that 50% margin mm-hmm. right there, and
yeah, it wasn't going. And even when I looked earlier in the week, it was in the 20s. Mm-hmm. Like there was
it's really harsh. That's not.
Yeah that's, but I mean, it we'll leveled get, we'll get out. To that later. Yeah. It leveled out on Friday, but yeah, we'll get to it in just a second. Go ahead, Nick.
But that was the idea that we picked The Girl on the Train, and we immediately regretted it, and then we went and saw The Accountant, and then immediately we're like, we really regretted going to see The Girl on the Train. Yeah.
I would have a lot rather the club paid to see The Accountant.
Yeah.
Although I'm hearing good things about Jack Reacher. I'm hearing some things.
First one was pretty good.
So. I liked the first one.
I liked the first one, but it really has been since it came out on DVD since I've seen the movie.
I saw it 2 months ago, so for the first time.
Okay. So, yeah, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
What else can we say about The Girl on the Train? We've bashed it to beats.
Don't see it.
Did we like any part of this movie?
There's some pretty shots.
Yeah, there's some good shots. Yeah. But the editing, though, was very distracting, so it kind of takes away from it, you know?
For me, this just looked like another, like, Lifetime movie that was shot on film.
Hmm.
Like, it looked like.
Was it shot on film?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why it's so pretty.
This just, yeah, this was completely shot on a celluloid film. But yeah, I thought the performances were fine. I mean, Emily Blunt, everyone's trying. Like,
yeah, they're trying their best. Yeah.
But they're straddled with like a first draft, and they're straddled with a director that's just like a hired gun.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I don't know. So it's like, I don't know like how this could have gotten better. I mean, David Fincher did a really good job on Gone Girl. But, I mean,
I think the marketing of this movie was trying to repeat the success of Gone Girl. But the thing is, Gone Girl is a very different story, though. It's very, very different.
And it's
different.
A much more cerebral story.
Yeah, and it's not dark because they're equally dark, I think. But it's the twist is more, the second half of Gone Girl is much more cynical. It's much more of a, what's the right
satire?
Word?
Satire.
Yeah, satire. Because the way they're, I won't go into Gone Girl, obviously, because everybody's seen that now at this point. But they're very different movies, though. They're just trying to repeat the marketing strategy, you know.
Yeah, and in going to the marketing, you know, the trailers were really unique. I liked the trailers quite a bit.
That's maybe all this movie should have been. It was a trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, Brandon pitched the idea of it being a short film, so
yeah, that's. I mean, it would have been more effective if it was quickly in and out. You know, just very brief. You know.
Yeah, maybe that's something we should do for our senior capstone is do like a Girl on the Train style movie, but do it in 30 minutes.
Why don't we just cut the movie to shreds and then just do that instead? Just get the whole movie, throw it in.
It's a copyright thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was it? Didn't Topher Grace recently do like the... Yeah, he redid the prequels and he cut them all into one movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Only like a handful of people in the world have seen it. Apparently, it's 10 times better.
Yeah, I've been meaning to do that with like my own version of that, but I don't have the DVDs of the prequels. I have the Blu-rays. I can't copy the Blu-rays to a
You know we have that here, right? Wow. At the school, we can copy Blu-rays.
Oh,
right?
You can? Oh, cool.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, it'll take a few hours though, won't it? Mm-hmm. Like just kind of sitting there, letting it burn to the file.
Yeah, but you don't have to do all three movies at once.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I just don't really have time to do that anymore. So I barely have time to edit. So.
But I think the supercut that I read about was the idea that Darth Maul stays the villain throughout.
Oh, really?
Or not throughout, yeah. But the way they cut it, they cut out Jar Jar entirely, yeah. And like there's a few other people. But now, if y'all are interested in another alternate version of Star Wars, sorry to bogart Star Wars real quick in there, but there's a really cool guy on YouTube who runs a channel called Belated Media. Who's done three different? If you want the prequels to be better, he's rewritten them essentially for better, and it's just something to check out. Just a little plug there for Belated Media.
Hmm. Yeah.
But moving on to The Accountant.
Yeah, we're gonna take a little quick break, and then we'll get to The Accountant in just a second, folks.
Who are you?
Sorry, soldier. You're different. Sooner or later, different scares people.
I have difficulty socializing with other people, even though I want to.
There's people looking for you.
If their secrets get too big, killing you may be the cost of doing business. If you go down this road, you can't go back.
Some of my clients are quite dangerous.
Why would your clients follow you? You're an accountant. We have to go to the police.
Police can't protect you.
So who is he?
The accountant.
Like a CPA accountant?
Not quite.
So, now that we're done with The Girl on the Train, finally, I was so glad we got through that. We can talk about The Accountant, a wholly better movie than The Girl on the Train in almost every aspect imaginable.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I freaking love this film.
Yeah.
It is, okay, so...
I fucking loved it.
Sorry. I will ask this question. Do we think this is Ben Affleck's Jason Bourne series?
I think
I hope it is. I hope there's a sequel. Because I think there could be a sequel.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential with this.
I want to see more of the Faces characters. Because you see at the end of it, you saw that who the...
Spoilers.
No, but if you haven't seen the movie by now, you're way behind the train. But I want to see who the smiley face... I want to see who the other... If there's other uses of the Faces characters. I'm really spoiling that part. That's in the movie. But I want to see them use... the Faces characters as sort of like an agency. That'd be really cool.
Okay, so you're talking about Ben Affleck's like little hub of people that he uses.
Yeah.
Little hub of autistic people he uses.
Yeah.
Each one with their own little specific set of skills, like Happy Face is good at hacking. She could hack the Pentagon with that computer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I like this movie a lot. It's got a very quiet action movie feel. Mm-hmm. It's got the autism thing going, which I really, really love. And I love that, and I love the characters, except for Anna Kendrick's character.
Oh, really?
I
liked her. Yeah.
Well, the thing, I'll get to that in just a second,
I saw your text about she was too young to play the part, and I don't know. We'll get to that later. Yeah.
I'll get to it.
Yeah.
Here's my problem with Anna Kendrick's character, and I know this is somewhat of a minor nitpick, but it kind of does ruin a little bit of the movie for me, is I think she was too young to be in the movie. I think if you would have gotten either like a Rosamund Pike or a Reese Witherspoon, or I'll even go out on a whim, Kristen Wiig.
No, not Kristen Wiig.
Well, just someone that's a little bit closer, because I can believe a woman can be an accountant for a firm, or not a firm, a tech company. I can believe that. I can believe that she...
Well, she was just out of college, so I mean, like, she was 25.
Who played Veronica roughly. Mars? Who is that?
Oh, Kristen Bell.
I think Kristen Bell would have been good for that role.
Yeah. But in the movie's defense, they didn't really have a relationship. It was kind of hinted at that was possible, but they never went that far with it. So,
well, I mean, in the end, he leaves her because he wants to have a relationship with her, but he leaves her because she thinks he will think he is too strange at some point, that or too different,
or dangerous. That's first, that's the obvious. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I love that shot at the end of him leaving, mm-hmm. but yeah, I mean, I just think her character was just too young to play someone who, and plus she was a little bit too like spitfire.
You know, she was a little too convenient. That was my only thing I didn't like about her. That was the only thing I didn't like. Cause otherwise I thought, I mean, I liked her. I like Anna Kendrick. Anna Kendrick's a
I like her too.
Girl, but
I'm not bad mouthing her. She did
and
her
then
best.
We found out she's 31 years old. I didn't know that.
In real life she is?
Yeah, in real life.
Yeah, well.
But still.
How old is Ben Affleck in real life? Is 44. He 45?
44, yeah.
44? Okay. Because I think in this he was supposed to be under 40, like late 30s, 40 roughly. So.
Yeah, but still, I feel like, you know, I wonder if Ben Affleck's character would have been like, okay, now I got to save this 70-year-old man. That I got to say, I wonder like if it would have been, he would have felt it different if, you know, if Anna Kendrick was like a 70-year-old woman or something.
No, I mean, but that's not, that has nothing to do with it. Yeah, that's not.
Like, yeah. I like that. I don't know why, but just thinking about like, you know, okay, now I got to save this 70-year-old man from being killed by John Barron, by the Punisher.
Damn okay, it. Well, besides the age difference in the relationship that doesn't happen,
what are my other flaws?
Well, the good parts about the movie. And then
good
maybe,
parts.
Yeah.
I love the direction. I think I'm
love the editing in this film.
And cinematography too.
Yeah,
great cinematography.
Yeah, Seamus McGirvey is always on his game, even in shit movies like Fifty Shades of Grey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's usually on top of his game. Sometimes his choices are a little questionable, but this time he nails it. And you're right, the editing's really good. Unfortunately, I don't know who the editors are for this movie, but
give me 2 seconds. Keep going.
But I love the direction. Ben Affleck gives a career best performance because I thought the way he played this autistic character was not only accurate to someone who is autistic, but also, who, you know,
It was held. It was held back. It wasn't forced. Yeah,
it wasn't like a crazy.
Yeah,
wasn't over the top. It was subtle.
Yeah,
it was restrained. That's what I liked about it.
Mm-hmm.
The film didn't hit you over the head with the fact that he was autistic. It was just
I mean, there's a couple moments, but like there's a couple moments, but other than a couple of moments, it's just very simple, very restrained. It's nothing outside of the character of what his limits are. You know, stuff like that. So what did you guys think? What did you guys like about the movie?
I like the idea that he was able to learn and overcome. Like I like, cause being from a military background myself, like the idea that they use that military style of thinking when it came to him raising him, as opposed to this, we're going to shelter him and keep him in this non-sensory environment. They did the exact opposite. They threw him straight into the fire and said, adapt or die.
His dad was crazy, though.
His dad was insane.
That was taking it too far. But
yeah, no wonder the mom left.
Well, for a movie like this that has action, usually a complaint I have with most movies like this is that the action, the hero isn't convincing, like the idea he could be a super soldier like this. But with this guy, it's very convincing from the flashbacks that this is how, that he can fight this well.
Even though the flashbacks for me, it's like, oh my God, you trained in what, China or Israel?
Yeah.
Like this is, okay, you know.
I mean,
your dad's
from what,
a little...
age 7, he was able to actually be trained like this? That's convincing enough.
And then didn't it turn out like the dad didn't really even have an identity? The dad was like, he was wearing military uniform, but he wasn't, he was like some special operations guy that didn't really have it.
Well, in that part where J.K. Simmons was kind of monologuing about this, I think at the wedding, at the funeral, he didn't really identify himself because he didn't want people to know that he was the ex-husband of the wife that died.
Even though the husband of his current wife, knew who he was.
Yeah, so I don't know if he was like a secret, like secret operative or anything. I didn't catch that.
And he was an asshole.
They said he was psyops.
Oh, he was? Okay.
Psychological operations, which is basically, those guys get to do a lot of cool stuff. They get to, when you go into the field, they go ahead of ahead of the infantry or ahead of a platoon, and they'll meet down with or they'll go ahead with the key leaders of a, and do a key leader engagement with the enemy of that area or that region, or even if it's a local region or if it's an ally of that region, they'll go ahead and they'll establish themselves as, hey, we want to know this information and we can help you with this information and we can give you this stuff in return, as opposed to for your cooperation. That's sort of what they do. So they get a lot of access to some really cool people and get to meet some really cool people. So I can understand where he would get that use of that Chinese master for martial arts, or he would get that introduction in that. There was one scene that took me out of the movie for a minute, and I didn't notice it until it hit me right there. Was that scene where he says to the kid, "You're gonna get your ass kicked by those bullies," and it was the use of the rain on the car, because I could definitely tell they faked that with the they just were dumping water onto the car to make it look like it was a rainy scene. That was the only time the editing was not on point, because I could definitely tell.
I didn't notice that.
I noticed it right off the bat.
I was paying more attention to the character and the story.
I assume Rain's fake most of the time in movies.
Pearson was the editor, by the way.
Okay, good job, Richard Pearson.
Yeah. The Guard on the Train had a terrible twist, or a poorly done one, this had a great twist at the end.
Even though I'll admit I did kind of see it more.
I saw it coming a minute before it happened, like maybe 2 minutes. But
no, I saw it way before that.
Oh, really? You did?
Because the twist is, and this is spoilers, John Barenthal's character is the brother of Ben Affleck in the movie, or the brother of Ben Affleck's character in the movie. I saw it coming because both John Barenthal's character and his little brother in the movie, in the flashbacks, all have the same haircut. So I was like, I know it was a far-fetched idea, but still I was like, yeah, these are brothers.
Well, I thought it was pretty good the way they did it, because the John Barenthal is very like wisecracking, very cynical, kind of always making jokes while he's
very logical person.
That's very logical.
Very logical person.
The brother in the flashbacks, the kid, doesn't say anything. He doesn't have any lines at all. So I think that was they did a very good job of not really like it. That made it kind of a surprise until I realized that when they were fighting in the house, that when John Barenthal was watching the computer screen, him, that's when I figured it out. But up until that point, I didn't really consider that.
Yeah, and I love that the movie doesn't end in a big old Big Brother shootout. It's just very quiet, very character intimate. These characters are catching up, and even John Barenthal's like, "Yeah, go ahead and shoot John Lithgow. I don't care."
Which I want to hit on that. Where did John Lithgow's character get access to men like that? Like,
yeah, that's the missing scene for me, because they just show you John Lithgow talking to John Barenthal. It's like, wait, wasn't there a scene where, shouldn't there be a scene where John Lithgow is hiring John Barenthal and these mercenaries?
Or like, maybe have a connection to why, because initially the first one before they even show him.
Well, to be fair, a lot of these action movies that have corporate businessmen hiring hitmen never show that.
Yeah.
In the first place.
But John Lithgow seems like such a peaceful CEO of a company. You know, he seems such like the exact opposite of that. So
like a philanthropist.
And now if they'd have shown like maybe a couple of scenes of like some, I know he worked a lot with prosthetics and stuff like that, so that maybe I could see where he'd get that little bit of that access to that world, because a lot of soldiers get prosthesis because of the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan.
That's true. Yeah.
But if they would have just shown like maybe, hey, this man, these people in uniform, like, or he has, like, maybe one of the special operators that they have in the movie has a prosthesis somehow using it. That would have been really cool. Like, maybe this guy sort of made his own cybernetic hitman. Yeah. That would have been really cool if they'd have done something.
If
like
his right hand guy had a prosthetic arm,
yeah, that would have been really cool. Something.
Yeah.
But then you would have had you wouldn't even need the John Barenthal's. If he had a right-hand man in the movie, or one of the two hitmen that you saw come in had a prosthesis, that would immediately have been a click to the whole thing, and I'd been like, all right, I know the twist is coming, but I'm ready for it.
Yeah. I like the old couple.
That was pretty funny.
The scene where he's helping them with the account, with the taxes, and then
that,
shooting
that,
them
like,
the field.
Stomping, they're like, hint, hint, wink, wink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When he twists the guy's neck and kind of waves at him, like, bye.
Well, he's not, he looks that he's not, well, this is a great part of the acting is, as a character, he's like, not quite sure how to respond, so he's just like, oh, hey, how are you doing? Like, he, like, that's, that is such great, like, you know, detailed character is that he gives him a look like, okay, how do I do this? Like, do I say hey? And he just goes the safest route and just waves.
Yeah.
And leaves. There's only one thing I didn't get, and this was, I might have gone over my head, and I might just be forgetting it, but, like, what was sort of Ben Affleck's motivation for dealing with all these bad men? I get that, like, he had, like, because I know he wanted to make money, but at the same time, it's like, is money the reason you're doing? Because if he really wanted to make money, there was so many times where he could have just said, "I don't need to be there." I know he has like.
You mean the bad guys all over the world, or
yeah, the bad guys over the world.
Yeah, I think he's making money to fund that facility, the institution for people who have autism. I think right, isn't that the?
Well, that's part. I think that would be a good. I think that is part of it. I think a lot of it also too is, you know, he's made a lot of connections over the years growing up with his dad.
Yeah.
That maybe, you know, he's doing this for, you know, friends of his around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they just so happen to be, like, mobsters and terrorists and really, really terrifying people.
Right.
So I think that's one in. And really, it could be just the idea that he just doesn't like saying no to people. He likes to help people work on a task. And for him, he doesn't like the idea of not finishing a task.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't like it so much that he's willing to almost break his leg doing it.
What'd y'all think of the allusions to mathematicians and the
I
like that little bit of idiosyncrasy, that little bit of a, like, oh, he these are people he idolizes, like Lewis Carroll, also known as Charles Dodgson.
Well, and he relates to them too, because I think the movie tries to tell us that they were all autistic as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he relates to them, and that's why he chooses them as their aliases.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cool.
And then, like I said, I love the editing in this movie is just on point. The way that they edit him into this sort of like a role, and then the choreography is good too. Like I don't know if you heard me at all, but when we were in the theater. I'm sitting there thinking, like, he's going to do this move with this move and that move, and he needs to do it. Oh, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, that's exactly how I would do that in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I trained in martial arts for 2-3 years, and just something – and I'm very basic at that, but he would go to, like, the head triangle or that. He'd switch from jiu-jitsu to Krav Maga and then back. And just the idea that he was so disciplined in all these different martial arts, I love that. And then to see that they actually trained Ben Affleck to do that stuff. They didn't just fake it with a stunt double.
Yeah, no shaky cam either. It was all very steady. And not as steady as something like John Wick or something. Like, there's movies that have more, like, steady, like...
Stagnant, you mean?
Yeah, steady camera. Like, not as shaky.
Oh, okay.
There's a certain degree where,
It felt very... I don't know if you ever saw London Has Fallen.
I haven't seen that
yet. Not London Has Fallen. The Olympus Has Fallen.
Mm-hmm.
You saw Olympus Has Fallen. It felt
no,
very...
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you haven't seen that either?
Yeah. I know.
Olympus Has Fallen, the action in that is on point just because it's so brutal, but it's not shaky. It's the idea
but
that...
But you can still see everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, and shaky cam has a place, like in Bourne movies, I think, the first three, it's pretty good, but usually I like martial arts when it's not shaky. It's very nice to see when it's a stage.
Well, shaky cam is very, like, cheap, like a cheap way to build momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes it can be utilized very well, much like the Jason Bourne movies.
Yeah.
I actually think The Hunger Games utilizes it very well.
That sort of panic feel, yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
I'm glad this movie was very straight, very, you know, stagnant. You can see everything. You can tell what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And to be really honest, this was a very cheap action movie, too. This was like a $45 million movie.
Oh, really? It was?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's cool. I mean, there's not, like, lots of big special effects and stunts, but, I mean, there's still massive shootouts. Ben Affleck's a big star.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, almost everyone's, like, a big star.
And speaking of that, you know, if this had been based on a comic book, which it easily could have been, it would have been a superhero movie, basically, or not a superhero, but he didn't have superpowers. But you know what I mean.
I think this could have been a nice Vertigo comic or, like, a good off-brand, like a Dark Horse, maybe.
And I think this character, this Christian Wolf character, the accountant, has what... is missing from a lot of the DC and Marvel movies nowadays. I think his character is so much more interesting as a hero, like superhero, than...
He's flawed, and that's what I love about
him. Yeah, he's flawed, exactly. Than the Avengers or DC because it's Ben Affleck and he's Batman
and
too.
You've seen some of the Avenger movies try and introduce flaws, like Iron Man was an alcoholic.
In the comic books, he was.
In the in Iron Man 2, he was an alcoholic. He was dealing
to a certain
with
that. Degree. Yeah, in the comic books, it hit.
But they like beat you over the head with it in those movies, as opposed to this one, where it's very like you'll just see every now and then you'll see him like do a little bit of a adjustment or. And then you at the very beginning, it's very methodical. This movie is that you see his daily routine, that sort of like nightly routine with the way he cooks his food, the way he sets his table, the way he
He only has three one piece of silverware each, and it's all very straight.
And then you see the breaking of that routine a little bit later in the movie when he can't complete his task. But the idea that they take their time with that, I love that, and they flush that out. And it's not just like, oh, he just stops doing that now. No, he did it because they provided a motivation for him to stop doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
And people have been complaining for years about dark superhero movies and dark action movies. But this is how dark action movies should be. Like, there's funny moments in this.
There's comic relief.
And it's dark for a reason, you know? It's not for the sake of being dark. Yeah.
It's dark because the characters are in danger.
Yeah.
Like, you feel, and you feel it too. You feel that Jon Bernthal, you know, has enough power and enough men to basically take down, you know, anyone, and to do it very stealthily, which I like. I mean, I love the scene where the diabetic CEO, like, he, you know, dies of just, you know.
Yeah, he just talks with him. He just talks him into killing himself.
Yeah.
Like,
which is much more creepier than him killing him, just point blank with a gun. That's much more unsettling.
Yeah. So, now that we've talked about how good this movie is, are there any flaws?
Long. There's some.
It's long. It's a very, like...
I didn't mind that. Yeah.
I didn't mind that at all.
I thought they could have ended it. They could have cut some scenes out and ended it a little earlier. I think they got in...
Maybe 5 minutes shorter, but yeah.
Besides, John Lithgow's character was a bit weak. My only major flaw is when J.K. Simmons just delivering exposition about his character. He could have told her that beforehand, before she started investigating this. Or maybe he figured it out afterward. I don't. It's that monologue seemed very forced to me in terms of screenwriting.
Like Which one?
When J.K. Simmons and her, they're at the house.
That's my biggest flaw. Yeah, you almost could cut that out of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that plot could have been that plot for me could have been completely cut out, because it almost serves no purpose other than to say there's a cop on the inside that Ben Affleck's character can trust. That's it for me. I mean, because really that whole investigation was unnecessary. Like, he could have just told her all this instead of spent a month investigating this.
Well, I like how he spared J.K. Simmons' life in that earlier scene.
That's a good scene.
But that's all we needed to know. Like, he delivers a lot of information.
I think they could have shown what they showed in the flashback in that opening scene and been fine with it. Like, you didn't know that was Ben Affleck's character.
That's true, too. Yeah, that's a good point.
I think that would have been really cool to do that, as opposed to him doing a sort of
flashback,
and then it's just him talking over the flashback on top of that. Like, if you're going to show it to me, don't talk to me. Don't tell it to me.
Because in the opening scene, they have the shadow of the gun, and they cut to the title. But they could have gone further and have him held at gunpoint.
That would have been really... Like, I get they want to set up that little bit of a mystery, but you immediately, like, start telling me 5 minutes later, and then you... I like the fact that he was a treasury agent, by the way. I like that they used an obscured department of the government to use this, as opposed to...
Well, he's an accountant, so that makes sense why they're using treasury, the money flow, you know.
At least, but it would have really cool to have been an IRS agent instead, or something like that. That'd have been interesting.
Possibly.
What was the female character that was who was hunting him down?
I can't think of
the actress's name.
Can you look it up real quick?
Yeah, I got you. She's not even in the top five.
That's how stacked this cast is. I mean, you have Jeffrey Tambor.
That's not Jean Smart. Jean Smart makes a small little role in this movie. She's even higher than I think it's Cynthia Adai Robinson. Yep.
I think that's right. And her character, I mean, it's a good character, and it's fun, interesting to see her learn all this, but in the grand scheme of things, and this is why I don't think the script is as strong as it could have been, Because when you think about the grand scheme of things, that whole investigation was so unnecessary.
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to provide exposition, that's basically. And
yeah, and I was like, just tell us what it is.
For them to find the house, it was also for the purpose of them finding his house and realizing it was a fortress, which is a pretty cool scene when they show the cameras and the machine guns.
It is, but that should have been what the investigation was, not... If J.K. Simmons already knew this stuff, then why not make the investigation? Then why not just tell her and then make the investigation part of this movie about him finding, about her finding Christian Wolf?
Yeah.
Because that for me was, that was my biggest flaw of the movie, is why is this subplot that's taking like 30, 40 minutes of the movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, here when in the grand scheme of things, it's super unnecessary.
Or if, like Nick said, if we had seen him be held at gunpoint in the first scene, there would have been a reason. We would have known why J.K. Simmons wants to find Christian Wolf so bad. Because it's the guy who spared his life.
Right.
That would have been more of a motivation for J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, and he just seems contempt of never finding him. Just letting him, like, lead him to roll. Yeah,
we understand why that is, but it's too late at that point.
Now, you think it would have been interesting if he'd have been in on it the whole time?
J.K. Simmons?
Yeah. I think that would have been really... He kind of already is. I know, but he is, but he isn't. He, in the sense that he doesn't like that he's doing what he's doing, but at the same time, he understands what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think it would have been really interesting to say, like, maybe J.K. Simmons is just like a hint, nudge. I need somebody to look like I'm trying to find this dude, but I'm not really. Like, that would have been really cool, like a little bit of a... He wasn't bought. He was sort of like a James Gordon character. Sort of like a I realize you're what you're doing is wrong. But I want to find these people and do these and I thought that would
be almost
really...
like making a deal with. It's like dealing with the lesser of two evils. It's like it's like, yeah, this goes against my morals, but I'm finding bad guys on the side as well. So, yeah, I think this was an interesting movie, and I definitely check it out. I mean, I understand where critics are coming from, sort of. Like, I understand the script isn't as tight as it could be, but other than that,
You can't take two flaws, though, or three flaws, and just tear apart the whole movie just based on that. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff with this, and the good things about this movie overcome the flaws by far. I mean,
yeah, and I would give this a solid... I told you the rating, Brandon, but I would give this a solid B+.
Yeah, for me, it might be an A-, maybe a B+. I don't know, somewhere between there. But
I mean, it's still in theaters right now. I think the only thing that's gonna suck about this thing is that it's flopping right now in the box office.
That's too bad.
It's only at $24 million right now.
Yeah, this is a weird October because the last couple of Octobers we've had one movie that's just like blown up. Because last year was The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
The year before that was Gone Girl. And then the year before that was Gravity. So this has been a very interesting fall that we've not had a movie that just has kind of taken over the box office.
Mm-hmm.
We're still kind of running on the fumes of September and a little bit of fumes on The Girl on the Train. But yeah, The Countin' is not doing as well as it should be doing, and I don't think Jack Reacher will do well.
Oh, really?
So. Well, it's stuck in a crowded weekend full of, you got Madea, you got Keeping Up with the Joneses, you got a Pure Flix movie, you got...
Can we talk about how much weight Zach Galifianakis has lost? Like, it's almost sickly.
For a quick tangent,
sorry, that's just almost sickly, like, yeah.
It's not like... Sickly.
Oh, it's sickly in the sense of like
he's getting older. He's trying to like get a little healthier.
He looks sick. That's what I'm calling.
I don't think people will see those three movies though. I think they'll go see Jack Reacher.
I think they'd see Jack Reacher.
I mean,
too,
why would you want to see those three movies?
I
mean,
wouldn't, but I mean, still, there's always an audience for each of those movies.
Yeah. Well, the Pure Flix one has a very, very small audience. I mean,
have you seen the box office gross of the God's Not Dead movies?
That one was more successful, yeah. This one is a Columbine, wasn't it? That's the...
I guess.
It's the one where...
I haven't watched the trailers for this at all.
Yeah.
I think the... another funny thing that's... I mentioned at the beginning when we went and sat down and watched the movie was the... Ben Affleck was advertising for his next movie and his current movie.
Oh, yeah, that Life looks by awesome.
Night. That's
that
a,
looks good.
That looks like a really good movie.
Is that coming out this year?
It's coming out December, I think January. No, well, it's getting a limited release in December.
Oh, it's one of those movies.
And then getting and it's coming out on January 13th.
That'll be an Oscar contender, I think. Definitely. That's
just barely.
Barely.
That's a strategy, yeah.
Well, I mean, the movie is finished, so I don't know why they thought The Accountant was going to be an Oscar contender for whatever reason.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I don't know if it's that good, but I think with a bit of tweaking, you can make an Oscar contender. But
sort of. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing Warner Brothers always does with their Oscar movies. I mean, they did it last year with Black Mass. I mean, everyone thought Black Mass was going to be like Johnny Depp's return, when really Warner Brothers should have invested more of their money, award campaign money, for Creed.
Well, he was pretty good in Black Mass, right? Johnny Depp.
To me,
I want to see Black Mass much more than Creed. Creed, I have no interest in, really. It's not.
You would enjoy Creed way more.
I love
but Creed. I don't like Rocky, so why would I?
No, but here's why you would love Creed, because you didn't like the original Rocky at all?
No, not at all.
I didn't like the second one, but a lot of people...
I'm a Raging Bull fan. I'm not a Rocky person. Yeah, I'm not.
Which, did you see? What was it? The Grudge
people
Match?
People love both.
I did see Grudge
Was Match. Grudge Match with Stallone and...
Stallone and De Niro? De Niro.
I didn't see Grudge Match, yeah.
That'd be something to look into if you like that. But here's what I like about Rocky. Stallone gives actually a great performance in that film, in Creed. Stallone actually gives a...
And Michael B. Jordan, too.
And Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan redeems Fant Forstick with Creed, and it's the idea that it's a continuation for it's a Rocky for a new generation, and that's what I like about it.
I wouldn't say Michael B. Jordan redeemed Van Forstick with Creed.
His performance.
Okay. All right.
I don't like the themes in Rocky. That's the best way I can put it. The themes, like I'm expecting Creed, like they're too simple. I'm just not interested in that kind of stuff. So, I mean,
okay.
I don't like sports movies in general, except for a few. They aren't really focused on the sports, so you know it's not really my kind of thing. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I think that's it for this podcast. Yeah. I mean, does anybody else have anything to say about The Accountant or Girl on the Train?
Go see The Accountant. Don't go see the Girl on the Train ever.
Yeah, I would give The Girl on the Train a C-. And keep in mind, people, I don't do D's.
Don't
so,
do D's.
I
would,
so it's
I would
the closest thing to an F.
Why don't you do D's?
Wait until it's on Netflix, and then just sit there and drink to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I told our friend and frequent guest of the show, Spencer Cantor. I told him just...
I would give it a solid D. I can't be nice enough to give it a C or anything like that.
Girl on the Train, definitely D, yeah.
I just never, as... You asked that question. I've never had a movie where I was like, it's worth a D.
Well, Fs are pretty brutal, you know, and Cs,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, my Fs are, I, you know, I'm pretty brutal when I give an F.
And Cs have good stuff about them, so, or good stuff about the movies.
Well,
that
C- for me has like one or two decent things that are like, you might can stomach it, and that's what a C- is you might can stomach because of these one or two minor things.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think, yeah, I think that's it. So, does anybody have any Twitter accounts they want to plug or anything to plug?
Nick_Briz.
Okay.
I never have any kind of social media stuff to plug.
All right. So, you can find me on Twitter @MovieKale, and you can follow The Youth Critic for all of our podcast and blog updates at The Youth Critic, and you can read my blog at www.theyouthcritic.weebly.com. And that's it for our show this week. Next week, we are going to be talking about Jack Reacher.
Bill happened here. There's a fight. One guy took them all down with his bare hands.
He's still in there.
Turn around, mister. Let me see your hands. Slowly.
Aggravated assault is a felony in this state, Mr. Reacher. Process him and get him to county.
Two things are gonna happen in the next 90 seconds.
Excuse me?
First, that phone over there is gonna ring. Second, you're gonna be wearing these cuffs on your way to prison.
Well, that is one magnificent prophecy, Mr. Reacher.
Just gonna keep on ringing.